Hello and welcome back to the KI Prime podcast. I'm your host, Alina Jenkins, and in this episode, I'm speaking to Professor Bridget O'Brien. Bridget is Professor of Medicine and an Education Scientist in the Center for Faculty Educators at the University of California in San Francisco. She directs the Advanced Fellowship in HPE Evaluation and Research at the San Francisco VA and co-directs the UCSF UMC Utrecht Doctoral Program in Health Professions Education. And Bridget's research focuses primarily on understanding and improving workplace learning. Bridget, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
So I know that your background is in organizational behavior and professional education. So how have you gone from there to your current area of research?
Yeah, well, I actually started in a school of industrial and labor relations, of all things, wanting to study I wanted to go into law school, actually, but in the process of being there, I got fascinated by how people do their work and how they get better in their work. And some of that came up in my organizational behavior classes. And then from there, I went into a doctoral program at the University of California, Berkeley in organizational behavior. And that was located in a business school. And so I got a lot of great introduction to social psych theories and organizational theories, but it didn't do as much focus on learning, which was what I was really interested in. So I, at the same time, started exploring classes in the School of Education and transferred over there after finishing my master's so that I could do a PhD in education. And there I studied the professional practice of early childhood educators and of people who worked with adults with developmental disabilities. And then a job opportunity opened up with David Irby to work on a national study of medical education in the United States. And I didn't know anything really about medical education, but I knew that that was one of the core professions that I'd read about in all the literature. And so I was really excited to get to study learning in that context, especially when they do so much of their learning in the workplace. So that was a fantastic introduction to medical education and health professions education. And then I was hired as an assistant professor at UCSF. So,
yeah. And it's just a great field to be in. It's a very wide field. So
yeah.
When you're looking at improving workplace learning, are there particular aspects that you're focused on?
Yeah. So, you know, what caught my attention first, I remember I was doing some focus groups with third year medical students. And in the United States, that's the first core clinical year. And I just remember this one group where a student said, I feel like every 2 weeks I land on another planet and it's a new language, it's new rules, and I feel totally discombobulated. And I thought, what in the world are we doing in medical education? Like, how did we end up this way? And so that got me really interested in these transition points in the training of physicians. And so the very first study I did in medical education was to look at students' struggles in this transitional period and to understand it both from why is it so hard for students and then the faculty that they're working with or the supervisors, how are they perceiving it? What do they think the challenges are for students? And then I wanted to compare those two perspectives and see where the disconnects were. And one of the interesting things that I found was that for students, it was so much those things about learning the rules, learning, you know, who was who and how to interact with different people. Whereas faculty kind of totally underestimated all of that because to them it was just taken for granted. And no one really thought to make that explicit to the students. So I think faculty thought more about, oh, the challenges of transitioning the knowledge from the classroom to practice or learning to give a case presentation or things like that, but not some of the more implicit kind of aspects.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like it was more sort of concerns around environment or softer skills or communication. So how would your research perhaps help to overcome that divide and sort of bring a more cohesive place to learn?
Yeah. So I think I've gone through my own transition in this work in thinking about initially, I started thinking, well, maybe we need better preparation and we need to do a better job of making some of these things explicit to the students. So one of the next studies I did was actually examining these things called transition to clerkship courses at our institution. And that led us to some interesting insights that we then wanted to see what are people doing around the country. So we thought maybe having some kind of course like this would make it easier. But then you realize all the complexities of, well, every site is different. How could you ever possibly make all of that explicit? So, you know, that may help somewhat. But then I started thinking, well, what if there's actually positive aspects of this? Because, you know, some of the literature would say sometimes pushing yourself a little bit, giving yourself a challenge is actually where the growth occurs. Mm-hmm. And then other people would argue, well, the adaptation that they have to do serves a functional purpose. And so that piece is valuable as well. So it got me thinking, well, maybe it's not all bad. Maybe there are good pieces. And so what could we focus on? How could we use that to optimize learning as well?
Yeah. Have there been other things that you've been looking at as well as transition? Or is the transition the main
focus? No, it's not. I think of my work really as what are some of the core kinds of problems that people run into when they're trying to learn in these complex environments. And so we also looked at, I guess, a little bit related to the transitions, but then we realized discontinuity is a lot of a challenge. So those comments about, well, it's not just that one time transition, but it's all the mini transitions. It feels very disorienting. So then we studied a new model of clerkships where students had longitudinal relationships. So they stayed with the same preceptor for a whole year. And we looked at how that compared to a more rotation-based approach where students were rotating with a new team every 2 weeks or 4 weeks. So we looked at kind of structures in that way. I've also done a fair bit of work on interprofessional teamwork. And one of the clinics that I worked at the Veterans Hospital transitioned to a model of interprofessional practice. So they were primary care oriented, and they devised teams of a nurse, a physician, a pharmacist, a social worker, all working together. This was a brand new style of practice where they all had a dedicated panel of patients. And we had the chance to design a model of education to train our what we call residents in the U.S. to work in that kind of team-based model of care. And so exploring what were the challenges that people encountered in that, how did they learn those processes, that was another area that I've explored.
What was the feedback that you got from that group?
You know, so much of what we found was that it was a cultural transformation. It was a whole new style of learning to communicate with one another. They had put in place these things called huddles. So they tried to have everyone meet in the morning to get on the same page about what was going on. But they had to learn. I think people underestimated that if we just put it on the schedule, everyone will meet. But like, what are we supposed to do in these meetings? Yeah. So they had to develop whole new processes for that. So I did a year-long observation of some of those huddle meetings to really see what's going on here. We even implemented a huddle coach. So someone would go to those teams and kind of give them some guidance and feedback about how they might do things, you know, a little more effectively. So,
and it's a culture change, isn't it? Which is something that we've been talking about with some of the other the other fellows. Did they come away from the experiments feeling that actually this was positive for them? Were you pleased with the results that you got back?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this model has stuck there. It's been over 10 years now. Yeah. And I think everyone there would pretty much say, I can't imagine going back to how things used to be. So yeah, we're really pleased. And it was also revolutionary that we were training physicians and nurse practitioners together in this model. So I think that really sparked other similar types of models around the country, which is exciting too.
What are your hopes over the next few years? Where do you want to put your main focus?
Yeah, I would say some of the work I'm really excited about right now that we're doing is trying to understand how people engage in lifelong learning and practice. So we all talk about lifelong learning is core to being a professional, right? But how do people actually do that? And that in and of itself, you know, may not be the most interesting question, but what we've started a study looking at is not when you ask people about lifelong learning, they tend to focus on the knowledge pieces and the like more technical skills that they have to keep up with. But there's so much focus now on things like interpersonal communication and well-being and even the emotional aspects of practice and how you continue to grow and learn from that. So we started probing people for those. So first they'd tell us about the knowledge and skills, and then we'd say, well, what about some of these other aspects of practice? How do you engage in lifelong learning in that respect? So that was the first piece of our study. And then next we'd say, and how open are you in sharing that with learners around you? So then we were thinking, well, what are learners actually seeing faculty model in terms of lifelong learning? So that piece we're pretty excited about too, because we've interviewed both faculty and learners to see, well, what do faculty think they're modeling and what are learners, you know, seeing from faculty or gathering from faculty? And then a third piece about that is really understanding what things are hard to share with a learner. And so, you know, faculty might say, yeah, I'm totally transparent. But when you dig a little deeper, you find out, well, at some point, that's a little too vulnerable, or it might inhibit my credibility with these learners, or interfere with my credibility. And there's a great paper on this that was sort of the inspiration for this by Liz Malloy and Margaret Bierman, called Intellectual Candor. And they originally called it intellectual streaking, which was even better, but I think they decided to make it a little more user-friendly or common of a term. So, and that's about this, how much can you reveal to learners? And does that create a safer learning environment, or when does that like interfere with the safety of the learning environment?
Yeah, some really exciting ideas for you. Are there any sort of brick walls that you think you might come up against? Any challenges? I'm just wondering, with some of it, it's quite subjective, yeah, isn't it? How do you assess it? How do you move forward with it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my dream is to do more observational work so we can really see what's going on. And I've done, like in the huddle work I mentioned, that we've done some work in that way, but it's very time intensive. I'm not trained as an ethnographer, and so it's a skill set to learn, and then writing it up is challenging. But I really feel like that's where I'd love to see my work move more, is being in the practice setting, because you learn so much through that.
And I think also taking yourself outside of your comfort zone, speaking about this and learning new skills yourself, as you say, you know, you don't particularly like writing it up,
right.
And kind of pushing yourself in that direction. I wondered if we could talk about mentors and mentorship. You mentioned David Irby, who I spoke to a few years ago on this podcast. So has he helped you to get to where you are today?
Oh, absolutely. I think probably especially as being a champion for me, I'm so grateful for Dave for hiring me in the first place, and then always pushing me to do better, to, you know, take the next step, to take on new projects, and giving me encouragement when I needed it and didn't really believe in myself. So he and Molly Cook, who was the other author on the first study that I ever did in medical education. So I definitely have to thank them. And then also Patricia O'Sullivan is someone I work with. It's really my boss at UCSF, and she's been fantastic too, from everything from reading papers and giving me feedback on them to offering me opportunities to give presentations places. So it's just been fantastic.
Yeah. It's such a wonderful field actually for that support and mentorship. I've said to other fellows, I don't think I've ever worked within helped other industries where you've had that level of support. Yeah. It's really, really great. And the final question is your thoughts on being here in Stockholm as being part of the 2022 fellowship. What does that mean for you and also potentially for your research?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I was really nervous, honestly, coming here. I thought, wow, this is a group of amazing people. And I've found everybody so welcoming and warm. And it's almost like group mentoring. Everybody's invested in helping everyone else. And I so deeply appreciate that. And then having the time to really stop and focus on our own work with, you know, some guiding framework to help us think about our work and put it together. It's just invaluable. And what I really hope is that I can take it back and share it with many of my colleagues at UCSF and elsewhere so that they can think about similarly, you know, using some of these tools to present their body of work. So,
Bridget, it's really lovely to speak to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody at home for listening. We'll be back very soon with another episode of the KI Prime podcast. For now, take care. Goodbye.